This is the London FinTech Podcast, brought to you by your host, Mike Ballaman, bridging the worlds of suits and t-shirts, of finance and technology, bringing you insights, stories, and inspiration from the golden age of opportunity and innovation happening in London right now.
Hi, this is Mike Ballaman, and this is the London FinTech Podcast, episode 250, brought to you in association with Smart and listedboard.com, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Ben Goldsmith, CEO of boutique PR firm Goldsmith Communications, to talk about PR, an important topic for tech firms that we haven't yet covered despite a decade of LFBs. Ben goes way back in the London fintech scene. I recall meeting him in the very early days, and along with his current business, he was something to do with Level 39 off the top of my head, and then we met him again at Balderton, when they are on the podcast, and now he's doing his own song and dance on the podcast. What a journey, what a life, eh? Naturally, we're going to talk about PR, it being the topic and all that, but without getting into too much detail, it's true to say that the PR industry per se is not entirely one shining with excellence and high moral standards, and perhaps not always integrity. However, Ben is one of a small handful of PR folk that I've dealt with over a decade of the LFB who is solid, efficient, and about as recommendable as it gets. So a great person to talk to about this topic. So briefly, PR, well, there's a spectrum, isn't there? At the one end, you've got the minor matter that if you've just built the world's greatest fintech app in your garden shed, or garden co-working space, I guess, that is indeed an amazing achievement. However, one that the world does not know about, a minor, if important, hurdle to infinite stardom. At the opposite end of the spectrum lies the very, very dark side of the force that Edward Bernays was causal in creating in the modern sense. As an example, one of his clients had a, quotes, problem, unquotes. Namely, that women were not cigarette smokers. That's a challenge, eh? Well, they weren't until Bernays invented the idea of branding cigarettes as somehow feminist and as, quotes, torches of freedom, thereby subsequently condemning millions of women to death. Although the health risks may have not been known at the time, but you get the basic point. Fast forward to today, and plenty of PRs were highly played by governments using taxpayers' money to convince taxpayers to be injected with perhaps the most lethal mass health intervention ever. Not good. So, as always, my spectra are by definition two extreme points. In this show, we will more practically look at how you can best use PR in your tech firm, how to get a good one, and the tricky line between marketing and lying, or the good side of the force and the dark side of the force. Plenty to talk about, so let's get on with the show. Good morning, Ben. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Mike, for having me on your show. And what an incredible introduction. I think about as recommendable as it gets is the best compliment I've received in many a long year.
Excellent. Well, long-term listeners to the podcast will know that those people what receive the most flattery in the introduction are about to be reminded that they are indeed mortal. And we were going to do this last week. I mean, you're a communications expert, which you'll tell us about in a little bit. But anyway, let's just take that as read for the moment. We were going to do this last week, but you had a bit of a cold. I was very sorry to hear you had a bit of a cold. And then this morning you were having problems with Zoom because you don't know how to use Zoom and things like that. So maybe just as a sort of setting the scene, you can talk about your personal skill set when it comes to communications. Or is it the case that in general, PRs are kind of Svengalis, behind the curtain, always behind the scene, pulling all the strings. But take a PR person, stick them in the limelight, and they freeze. Oh. I'll answer that if you want. I'll send the Bitcoin to the address I just sent you, and I'll cut that bit out.
Well, I think, first off, it's a pleasure to be on the show after working with you so many times to get some phenomenal luminaries behind your mic. So incredible to join them and to do my best to earn my place in the limelight. I think there's been so much interesting stuff said about PR already. I think I'll take the tactic of looking at it from, if we're talking to an audience of fintech CEOs and the like, what will be most useful for them to understand and what will be most valuable perhaps to share. I mean, from my own perspective, yeah, I had a cold last week. That's cleared up nicely, so hopefully my dulcet tones are coming across loud and clear in a way they weren't last week. And this morning has been rather exciting and busy. I momentarily mislaid my Zoom password, But in our defence, we had a bunch of news stories leap forward this morning. Not quite out the gates as yet, but we're looking at an acquisition story in fintech, more to come on that, as well as we work in venture capital. As you alluded to, I was at Balderton before setting up this company in 2017. So we're working with a couple of fund and funding stories. So it's all happening on this morning. So luckily, I've had a couple of strong cups of tea, remembered my Zoom password, and now I'm talking to you, Mike. So it's only onwards and upwards from here.
Yeah, so I've just learned another lesson in karma. in that while we were talking, in terms of communication skills, my microphones, one of them's decided to die and the other one's gone a bit intermittent on me. So yes, for all you young listeners out there, if you give someone a good kicking, expect the universe to give you a good kicking back just to remind you how it all works. So I touched in great depth on your career journey. I mean, I don't know whether you'd like to be a bit clearer, and you probably know a little bit more about your career journey than me. So how did you get into this sort of essential/dire industry that's known as PR?
How did I get into it is an interesting-ish story, I suppose. I started, as so many do, on the journalistic side of the fence, and this is going all the way back to what I did at university and what I did for very little or no money upon graduation was journalism. And originally I was a culture writer, this is a long time ago, for a publication amongst others called The Upcoming, which was new when I'd graduated. Now I see their quotes on movie posters and so on, but I was there when it was far smaller. And at the same time, I was trying to do things like move out of my parents' home. So I wanted to earn some money. And I did that this is when I was 20, 21. I was running social media accounts. So I was writing blog posts about events and things like that. And also I was doing a bit of journalism. Quite at the same time, I did need to earn cash. So the story is I got some cash in hand work from a signage company in the sort of Shoreditch area. So I was quite literally going around hanging signs, you know, old school, the oldest form of communication, signage. I was hanging signs, and I hung a sign in a co-working space. And this was in the days where you could count the co-working spaces in London on two, perhaps three hands. And I went back to the guy that ran the signage company and said, "That looks like an interesting place. Do you think they'll need any of this, you know, social media stuff that I'm trying to sell, social media and copywriting and so on?" And he said, "I don't know really, but I'll put you in touch with their marketing manager." That conversation turned into a meeting. The meeting turned into a month's work, which then turned into my first freelance client doing anything akin to copywriting, social media management and all of that. And that is back in sort of 2010 kind of time. And then over time, that turned more into PR, where they needed some, essentially, to raise their profile even more. And given I was in the journalistic pool all the way through university and thereafter, I could apply that skill set, I suppose they would say. But it is one of those stories where perhaps it was more reacting to circumstance and being a bit entrepreneurial, I dare say, in hindsight, in that my first client way back then was the result of hanging a sign in their lobby and then quizzing the signage company as to whether they'd want a conversation. And the rest is history. From there, I hosted lots of events with what became Tech City UK, things like we're going all the way back for people that have been hanging around London Tech for 15 years or so. Before what became Tech Nation, Tech City did a launch event at this co-working space I worked at and where it was a freelancer for. So it put me at this in the middle of this kind of soup of a very, very nucleic tech scene in London, which was still pulling itself together. You know, there was still, compared to the numbers that the scene's doing now in terms of the amount of money being invested and the amount of attention even, it was nothing like what it is now. But I was very fortunate to be right in the middle of things. So it's a bit of a long answer, but I was fortunate to be in the middle of things working in what became sort of tech communications. And because of that, we were setting up events. I was doing a lot of work with the tech media on that. And when Level 39 launched as a fintech accelerator in March 2013, I'd been part of the team there since January of that year, helping with the communications behind the scenes. And that was fantastic because then I went, full bore content creation and media relations in fintech in particular, and was part of Level 39, which was a Canary Wharf based fintech accelerator for those unaware, as it spread its wings. Two brilliant years there, and that earned me the move to Balderton Capital, I suppose, where it was broad, looking at European tech from a broad sphere, as they invest all across Europe. And then I did 2.5 years there, which was amazing. And then it felt like the way to grow, the way to do more work, was to launch my own agency, which I always wanted to do. So I did that in July 2017. And that's when Goldsmith Communications was born. And we work with B2B tech firms, a lot of fintech in there, and also venture capital firms. So we're boutique and focused, and we've been around almost for 7 years.
Excellent. Well, having got kicked in one shin by karma in terms of one of my microphones dying, I've now got kicked in the other shin for my scurrilous thought that the sort of Svengali's hiding behind the curtain gets sort of starstruck when they're in the limelight and given a microphone, because actually it's quite the opposite. They've been standing there so long, unable to talk themselves, that they grab it. Anyway, so executive summary, which is that a bit like all of our lives and a bit like history, one thing led to another. So let's dive into PR per se. You naturally know a little bit more than I, but let's start off with Mike's sort of ChatGPT as if to a 2-year-old level of understanding. And this whole spectrum from necessary spreading of messages about companies and products, without which the world wouldn't be as it is, to, at the far side, the very dark side in terms of bad actors, be they corporate or state, using their skills to manipulate other human beings, not for their advantage, whether that's to buy something they don't need or whatever, is by the by. So how would you see that sort of spectrum coming from your perspective as an insider?
How do I see that spectrum? Well, I think perhaps it's useful to put it in the context of fintech potentially, and how that spectrum operates within this industry. Because from my perspective, as I say, I've not worked in one of these big firms that potentially touch all of those sides of the spectrum, doing that more shady, nefarious work of political influence and whatever else it might be. But within the fintech industry, I think it's perhaps useful to think of, like, what is PR in terms of how is it useful for you, the fintech CEO, and then when and how you need to engage with it. Because I think the one thing I'm always quite keen to talk to CEOs about is PR can be quite a strategic and powerful tool, so you should only really use it when it's appropriate from a business perspective, because essentially doing PR if you don't need it could put something into the public domain which could be particularly unhelpful, or doing it too early or doing it in a sort of half-cocked kind of way can be just as harmful. I mean, this is drifting away from the spectrum, but we'll pull you back to it. And I think it usually depends on what stage your company is at. If we're thinking about fintech, for a B2B fintech, what kind of PR you'll typically need to do and what that will look like in a very literal sense. I think if you're an early stage company, you'll need to think of what your business objectives are, and you're essentially growing a reputation in what is a crowded market, in pretty much any market. And the other part of that is, if you're a fintech, you're typically always dealing with money pretty much, and you're usually dealing in a market where trust plays a huge part. So you're building trust from nothing. So what is the best way to do that? There are many ways to do that, and PR is one of them, working with the media in particular. Then as you grow, we'll sort of do this quickly and then come back into things. When you grow, there's typically a move from being a startup into being a more sophisticated, bigger business, and your messaging essentially will need to change in step with that. So how do you move from an insurgent building your brand, setting yourselves apart from the incumbents, whether they're banks or big financial services players or whatever, and then how do you essentially normalize your reputation in the market and push beyond, whether it's early adopters or whether it's your sort of first business clients? How do you become a more sort of typical presence in the market? And then it's a case of, yeah, where we look at, if you become a big business, you've done it, you've achieved the high ground, you're going to need to own your narrative. So potentially it's less about building a reputation and more defending a position in the market and making sure that your taking ownership of your narrative because there are other participants in the market that will do that for you if you don't take ownership of it, whether it's media publications, whether it's competitors. So that sort of is the gamut for fintech companies, I'd say.
Okay, well, let's leave the dark side to one side. I mean, as Elon Musk said, PR stands for propaganda, which is the level that he's working. It is very much that. But as you say, in terms of the fintechs listening to the show, maybe it'd be helpful to explain what products and services PRs offer to tech firms as a whole. Really, the way I'm hearing you in terms of the journey of the tech company as a whole, the needs of messages that they need to spread to the outside world clearly evolves over time. That's clearly something for the sort of CMO as well. So let's say I've got a newco, midco, bigco, and I have a CMO. And I say, go and deal with those PRE people. What do CMOs, I assume, or maybe just the founder at the early days, when they go to a PR, be it you or somebody else, like most definitions of problem and need, they don't quite understand what they want, and that there's somebody who does it 24/7 understands it better, and you have to clarify what it is they're after and all that kind of thing. But in simple, just kind of drawing lines on a whiteboard basis, is the PR simply a conduit from, as it were, inside the building where you're working and taking the words, whether they're written or spoken or pictures as well, I guess, and somehow getting those into channels to, quotes, audiences who will then hear them? I mean, is it literally that you, on one hand, a PR has a firm, and on the other hand, they have 99 favourite, I don't know, publications and, I don't know, events or podcasts or you name it. And then literally then the PR's role is just to, having clarified what the client's up to, let's put that to one side for a moment, is literally just to sort of get the message out, quotes, as much as possible.
That's a pretty good summary, really, of the sort of what the transaction looks like if you were to write PR, sort of the media relations side of PR down as a formula. I think what I'd put in front of that is ensuring, you know, when you talk about getting those messages out of the company and into the public domain, essentially, is has to be strategic and to do with business goals. So when talking to whoever it is inside the fintech, you say, if you have this growing fintech company, you need to know why you're doing communications. So before that, you need to forget about communications entirely and think about where are we with this business? What are we doing next in the next 12 to 18 months that is of strategic importance? Because if it might be we need to raise more venture capital investment. We've got our Series A, but if we sort of go for Series B within 12 months, we could actually break the US market, which is critical for us. Or could it be a case of, well, our tech is in a really good place, but now we actually need to get this in front of customers. We need to think about how we expand our offering to more insurers or whatever it might be. And we work with Whale, big companies, and their onboarding takes 9 months, whatever it might take. If we have that on the table, then you can make way more sophisticated and better decisions about what you're doing with all of your marketing, and PR as a slice of that, media relations as a slice of that. And then when it comes to your messages, which you've indicated are very important, sort of the core, that core language that you want about your business in the public domain, and also the evidence of that, which is the part that sometimes gets forgotten. It's all very well having messages that you want to land about, you know, being the sort of best in the market for money laundering or whatever it might be, but it's the evidence part of how do we actually quantify that, whether that's in time, money, can we talk about clients that we work with, what else can we say that actually quantifies what we're saying as fact, in inverted commas, or something we can back up, probably a better thing to say. And then, as you very correctly indicated, audience. It's all about audience, because you could say all of this stuff but say it in the wrong place, and then it's about as useful as a chocolate wristwatch, because you need to be direct, be sophisticated with how you're directing your communications. And going back to that example, if it's more of a strategic priority to get in front of your next venture capital investor at that moment than it is to actually talk to insurers, for example, because you could be in a position where your client base is growing healthily and also it grows by referrals. You perhaps know through research that marketing, external marketing, isn't moving the needle quite as much for you right now. So you can leave your main customer audience to one side for the medium term and potentially focus on a different strategic audience. These are the kind of decisions that need to be had before you're talking to your PR, or your PR should help you make these decisions, because then your targets are completely different. If you're focusing on venture capital investors, you should talk to the tech media where they're hanging out. You should talk to the business media where they're hanging out, as opposed to if your main customer group are insurers, there's a bunch of insurance trades, more hardcore financial services trade media that you should talk to. So with that business strategy at the top, it will guide the rest of the beast. And it's when that is taken away that you sort of perhaps see PR feel unstrategic, because essentially you're doing things that aren't... The tail can end up wagging the dog. If you're putting, oh, we've got a great opportunity to talk to this podcast before the rationale of doing that, that's when it can start feel like potentially a drain on resources or something like that.
Yes. Okay, so leaping forward a bit, but in terms of parting advices to tech founders, tech businesses, marketers, or whatever, from what you're saying, that one of the two main added values from a good PR, as opposed to a, quote, bad PR, or not so good PR, is to help with the communications strategizing in terms of all these points that you mentioned. Don't need to go over them again. And then the sort of secondary part is connecting two audiences via, quotes, media firms. So having explained a little bit about, and there's a triangle here really, but, or maybe just a straight line, having explained a bit about what it matters to the tech firm and the sort of thinking in their mind, and then you're facing them, and then you, or in my experience, some in general the industry, some intern or somebody who hasn't been given any training, whatever, then at the other end can all too often, let's just say this is in quotes bad PR firms, but in that case we'd have to say a lot of firms are bad, they just spam people regardless, because they're an intern and they joined yesterday. And you know, I get hundreds of emails a month that say, we love your podcast. Oh, right. Okay, you all do. That's nice. But with totally random from my end of the spectrum, communications. So one of the ways to, you know, ruin my inbox is to say, exciting news. You know, we've got this embargoed till midnight. So-and-so is joining as the new CFO. I couldn't give a flying fuck, frankly. And actually, if there's too much of that and there isn't an easy way of stopping it or getting the channel to send me the relevant information, then that actually degrades it from my perspective. Now, I'm just an example, but the same will apply, whatever, whether you're writing to the FT or whether you're writing to CDAM or something like that. There's some poor sod at the other end who's got to plow through the emails, and the more that one can send the appropriate emails, that one the better. And way back in the day, there was a nice chap who did run a very good PR boutique, his name escapes me now, who sort of reached out to me and said, actually, I listened to the last couple of episodes, you haven't talked about this, and my client can say this and this, and they go, oh, wow, thank you, God, because, look, I don't actually have to sort of scratch my head, get splinters in my fingers and think about the next episode, because he's, like, teed it all up for me. So now that's kind of almost like a sales thing, and in the modern world, as we know, one method of sales is just to send a billion emails out on the basis that one in, you know, 500 million will get a result. And that is a sort of the cheap and dirty thing. The other one, and it springs to mind that I once saw a very good, well, I think it was a book title, actually, maybe in a New York bookshop, which is that good salesmen make fewer calls. So the other approach is not to spam a billion people you've never met in your life and you haven't got a bloody clue, and you don't pay any attention when they reply unless they say yes. The other one is to be more targeted in terms of the outreach. And that's one of the things that differentiates you and literally less than a handful of people over the decade, in that if you contact me, I know you're not just going to waste my time or spam me. And equally with the other PRs, you know, who've produced some really good guests over time. So they've got the credibility, they've got the trust from the media side in the PR person. And that goes straight to the sort of the front of the queue, as opposed to the sort of several hundreds, mostly spam, that sort of sit there. And poor Bridget will know, because I'll say, oh no, I've got to do 300 emails today and plow through them. You know, just giving up, sort of deleting them. I mean, just from my perspective, one thing that I have done, I started doing in recent years, which is actually at the bottom to put pitching notes, like, you know, so I reply. So some poor sort of an intern, for the sake of argument, extremizing it as always, has been given no training and just told, here's a telephone directory or here's a million emails kind of stuff. At least they get a reply from me saying, look, if you want to get on the show, these are the kind of things I'm after. These are the kind of pitches that work best, etc. Remarkably few people pay attention to that.
I think you've hit on something that is has put me in mind of two things. And first off, I'm very glad that we've been working on this podcast. Well, you've been working on the podcast and I've managed to work with you on a few amazing guests over the years. But it's put me in mind of two things. You talking about good salesmen make fewer calls. You know, I started this PR agency when I was 27, which looking back is kind of crazy and you know, makes me sound like some kind of egomaniac of like, why did I think I could do it better? But I just had the feeling that there was room for specialists. There were definitely a handful of good agencies out there when I was in-house at Balderton, the job I had before I set up the agency. But there were a lot of blunt instruments, and it's useful to hear it from, in this situation, the journalist's point of view, the podcast host's point of view. It felt like there was a lot of non-specialized plays, just sort of trying to learn the market quickly, those markets being fintech, which is so idiosyncratic and so full of publications and things like podcasts and newsletters that just serve the sector that I think you have to know. You also have to know the dynamics around it. There's also sort of trade media within trade media in insurance, compliance, whatever it might be. So it felt like there was room for specialists. We also specialize in VC because I was in-house at VC as well as Level 39 in fintech. So I thought there was room to almost build a PR agency with experience at the top, and to keep that experience sort of senior counsel, whereas the method of building PR agencies has typically been big pyramids with lots of junior people, because that's how the economics has to work. But then you get those non-specialized approaches. So I think that's sort of potentially when if this sort of fintech CEO who's launched this amazing company and is searching for their PR, to sort of go back on that point you mentioned earlier, that's something to consider. What kind of PR are you talking to? Are they sort of large and potentially unwieldy in places, but they could have really great global reach? They'll likely be more expensive, but there are upsides in the big firms for sure. Usually the networks that they have, especially from a global perspective, pretty good. But then there's boutique firms like us that are typically, we know what we know really well, otherwise we wouldn't be in existence, but we're narrow. So it's a case of we'll take care of your English language communications in B2B, fintech, in the tech world, in business, in finance, whatever. But if you then suddenly need to do a huge consumer campaign in the German language, you're going to need to take on another firm or something like that. So that's usually the balance that people are looking for. Specialists can do a focused bit of work with a company with goals within that remit, but then the larger agencies are good for a more global or a more varied remit typically. So that sort of put me in mind of that. The other thing is sort of the fintech CEOs or the expert, whoever's being put in front of the mic to talk, should know why they're useful to journalists. So this is the sort of point you're making of, I don't want your CFO announcement story because I'm not a news journalist. But that's just sort of table stakes, knowing what journalists do and what their beat is, what their remit is. Because there's a lot of publications out there, when you read them, it's pretty clear that they're posting 10, 15 news stories every day, and they're doing a really good job of that. FinExtra in fintech, they're posting so many news stories, but they're keeping the industry up to date. They're a publication of record for the industry, as we say. So your news stories, we've raised 5 million of investment, or perhaps we've appointed a new CEO, or whatever that story might be. We've acquired a company, or all of those kind of stories. The news media will eat them up, and you're useful to them because of your news flow. So knowing your news flow as a fintech company is something you should be ahead of. Some of it's obvious. We've raised a bunch of money. Of course, that's news. Some of it, you're sitting on news that you might not know about. So if you're making partnerships with other good companies, if you've got a partnership with Visa or Wise or whoever it might be, then the fintech trade media could gobble that up, and that could be useful for you if you're looking to strategically raise your reputation as being a sort of sophisticated, connected player within your industry. So just knowing how you're useful from a news perspective is one thing. And also to your point, Mike, of what you're interested in, put it under the banner of thought leadership. You, CEO of a fintech company, are an expert I know you do it every day. Sort of you're running a compliance or payments firm every day, so you probably feel this is your day to day. But for someone listening in, you are a leading expert in the country, if not the world, in that subject matter. And that is the value you can bring, certainly to people like you, Mike, where you dive deep into certain subject matter. So knowing, firstly, that you're an expert in that, and secondly, why that expertise is relevant now and relevant to your audience, to go back to that point, that's the sort of magic that will get you to the, hopefully, to the front of the queue, to the top of the inbox for journalists, because you're being relevant rather than just being, yeah, bad noise, kind of sort of unfocused noise. And I think that's the perhaps the framework to put around it.
Excellent. So moving on from that and trying to narrow it down a bit, in terms of tech firms choosing a PR firm, there's obviously a number of points that you've raised which they need to bear in mind. And from the spectrum of, in terms of the PR facing you, you want someone who can give you good advice. So let's say I start a business tomorrow. As listeners will know, I'm an idiot. And I go, oh, I know what I want. I've invented this product overnight. I want to be on 4 podcasts next year, Ben. And I want 76, articles about me online, because that will definitely help. Just producing some random metric, which is just a volume metric, as it were. And I ask you and you say, well, I don't do that kind of stuff. And I ask someone else, oh, yeah, no problem. But, we'll charge whatever. But a lot of what you've described is within the box of the PR firm, in terms of whether you just sort of spam everybody in Germany in English, even though they don't read English, etc., etc., or whether it's more targeted. So the clients never get to see that. So let's say I, or indeed probably more relevantly, listener, are looking at changing their PR firm, whatever, next month, or engaging a PR firm for the first time, or they've heard what you've said and thought, oh, okay, well, I'm getting some of that from my existing partner, but the other racy parts of the Karma Sutra, I didn't even know they existed. And blimey, that sounds rather good, actually. I'd quite like some of that action. How on earth do they go about choosing a PR firm? So if you go back to when you were at Balderton wearing that hat, and you had to hire PR firms. So if you can just give some sort of brief points for folks to remember about, okay, how do you hire a PR firm, and then maybe in terms of the small, medium, large offerings. I mean, I remember back in the day, probably a decade ago or something, I sort of asked people casually about PR. I said, what's PR? I said, oh, you pay $5,000 or $10,000 a month and you get a partner who's really nice to you, and then you get not a lot. That was a summary from 10 years ago of the average person I spoke to. So rather than firms now just getting a nice partner speaking to them and then not a lot, but also how prices have changed in a decade because there's this thing called inflation. Yeah, so advise the listeners out there who may need to select a PR firm.
Yes, so talking to the fintech CEO that's changing firm or appointing a firm for the first time, I think something we come across a lot is just be aware of what you don't know to the extent that you can, and arm yourself against that. So I'm not talking from a perspective where I'm selling a PR firm. I'm saying you as a CEO, it's perfectly fine if you don't know what PR is and how it works. That's not what you're paid to do. You're paid to know how to run and grow an organization. And also you're an expert in whichever field it may be, whether it's payments, compliance, or so on. So if you don't know the ins and outs of how it works or how it should work, absolutely fine. But there is counsel out there for you that can make it pretty clear in a 5-minute phone call. Especially if you have taken venture investment, they'll usually have someone at their team who can essentially give you a framework through which you can look at, here's what PR should mean to our firm. The first thing I think you should consider is, why do we need PR, and could we do without it? Is a question that you should ask at a kind of C level, or if you're talking to your board. Because if you're thinking you need PR, you probably do. There's probably something telling you that is the right signal to listen to. However, I always try and ask clients, like, I'd rather give them reasons they don't need PR and work out they do, rather than try and sell them it, because then you know you're doing it for a good, focused and strategic reason. So the first thing I'd say is, like, get, as I mentioned, at sort of the top of the pod, what are those business priorities and how could PR help augment them, rather than PR just being a box checking exercise. So that's the first thing to sort of think about from a business perspective. Why are we doing PR? Because then if you know the answer to that, and the answer is, we're doing PR because we need to elevate our reputation in the insurance sector in the English-speaking world, because they're our customers, and we've done all right so far on referral, or I sold back into the company I used to work for. But honestly, brass tacks, we need to elevate this number, and PR is one of the levers we definitely need to pull at this stage. Or you've heard, or you've got it from experience. So when customers are doing their due diligence, they're just finding nothing online about you other than your LinkedIn and your website, and you need to bolster that reputation by getting these, essentially, media is fantastic third-party validation, because you don't pay for it. It's done on your reputation or your achievements, whether it's news or thought leadership, it's on your achievements or reputation in that order. So you should know why. You should go into those conversations from a business reason, knowing exactly why you need PR. And then I would, first off, if you know the sort of the audiences you want to reach, then you've got a specific that you can judge for. You can look at, you can talk to firms about their experience in that exact sector, which other clients perhaps similar to you in focus, sector, geography, have they worked with before, and just get track record. The other thing is, if you're a CEO doing good work in fintech, you'll know other CEOs doing good work in fintech, and they make good referrals. I mean, I tried not to make it too salesy or anything, but I think perhaps our first or one of our earliest fintech clients were Comply Advantage, who we still work with, and that was because Balderton were an investor of theirs, and I knew Charlie from that way, so that was a referral of sense. But you should just sweat those networks. Who do you know? Who can you get referred? And what type of agency are there? Are they? So if you get referred two or three, potentially look at one boutique firm. If you're a fintech agency, look at one boutique firm that does a load of work in fintech, because they'll know your neighborhood. And if that's the kind of, if that's the kind of results you need, this kind of, yeah, building your reputation in insurance or in fintech or whatever, then look at them, because they're the specialists. But then it could also be worth looking at sort of a mid-size a strategic PR agency that has a broader base of clients, because they may have other ideas. It's definitely worth canvassing a broader range. I'm speaking as a boutique agency, but totally not trying to denude the value of other types of agencies, for sure. So I'd say talk to two or three. Referrals are always great, however you might get them, but they're out there to be had. And also going into that meeting sort of knowing why you're doing PR, not just getting pitched by the agency, but you actively sort of hunting with a spear, looking for certain output from your agency will help you drive those conversations rather than being pitched to by the PR.
Excellent. Well, listening to you also reminds me of somebody asking my advice about how to recruit a new chairman, because it's quite hard, and this process is generally dating and mating over a period of time. It's quite hard to understand, mixing metaphors, what somebody's like when the shit hits the fan, or you're in a foxhole, or stuff like that. And it's quite hard to assess how good someone's going to be as a chairman. Now, it doesn't matter whether it's a chairman or a CTO or a PR firm, but some important hire to the firm. And my advice was simply, well, if you're getting a new chairman, you've got a chairman at the moment, which they had. Well, what kind of situations did you have that, as the founder, you found challenging, and that you didn't really find that the chairman did enough for you or solved it? So take those practical circumstances and then discuss it with the interviewees for chairman or PR firm or whatever. So I recruit a PR firm tomorrow, and I say, well, I haven't had a PR firm. maybe that's why I've been going badly wrong, actually. Anyway, apart from that, but let's say I had, and I say, well, actually, look, you know, we're okay in Germany, but not one French person listens to us. And then you can talk, and then you give the people an opportunity to let them know how they would help you or something like that. And also, I think the other thing you get from that kind of approach is it's a good way of fishing for how much homework, i.e. how hungry and keen the potential chairman, the potential CTO, the potential PR, etc. are. And the scholarship candidate would probably reply in those circumstances, as it were, well, I think one reason, Mike, is that every episode you insult the French non-stop, and you keep mentioning Agincourt all the time. And maybe if you didn't mention Agincourt and Cressy and things, then your profile in France would be better. As opposed to every episode you say that Bismarck is actually a wonderful chancellor, and, you know, etc. And pointy hats are really good things. So yeah. So anyway, that's just what I'd add. I mean, you know, to what you're saying, which is have some practical examples of the business thing you've had and you found personally a challenge in the past and awesome. So, before we wrap up the show, I'd like to thank all you listened out there and my brand partners of the podcast. Smart is transforming pensions and retirement worldwide. Their leading edge retirement tech platform propelled them to success in the UK. Now they're operating on four continents and working with partners like Zurich and JP Morgan. Find out more at www.smart.co. The listedboard.com, your guide to entrepreneurial governance and how you can start making your board an engine of growth today. Okay, Ben, so you've said a little bit about PR and you've mentioned the fact that you guys do it perhaps once or twice, but not very specifically. So maybe you'd like to let the listeners know which verticals you're in, which of the kind of businesses out there should select you, which shouldn't select you. And it also occurs to me that in a typically very barrister-like fashion, perhaps, you're very good at avoiding questions. And one of which is, I go out and I hire a random PR firm. It costs how much per month? Maybe I'll ask that one first, because we'll just finish the main course on that one. Ballparks. Ranges.
Ballpark costs, and it's the two types of work. Is it a project? So is a one-off fee for the project of work you're doing, or are you taking on a PR firm on a retained basis? So you pay them the same every month, or it could go up or down if you're drawing down on certain services, depending on the firm. However, the window that you mentioned of sort of depending on what you're asking them to do, because, you know, I don't want to make assumptions that to give one figure and then you're asking PRs to do loads. So look, but you should, if you're a fintech company and you've raised your Series A money or whatever, like to give an indication of size, I think you should be looking at between £5,000 and £10,000 a month if you want a decent retainer, and perhaps sort of north of that if you're doing a lot of work. Like, and that's if potentially if you're consumer facing, so consumer engagement stuff typically is you're doing more and regular because you're engaging a big old group of consumers. So I'd say that's the ballpark you're looking at. But there are so many caveats around that.
It's a ballpark. You're not going to get it for £1,000. You don't have to spend £50,000 per month. That's the main thing. Anyway, let's come on to Goldsmith Communications then. Which verticals, where are your strengths that people should be checking you out? And vice versa, which areas should they not be checking you out?
So Goldsmith Communications is a strategic communications consultancy that works with B2B tech firms with a strong bias towards fintech due to my personal experience and a lot of the experience of the team. We're a team of five and we also have a bunch of freelance writers, a lot of former journalists that work with us to ensure the content we create is media appropriate and as good as it could be. So if you're a B2B fintech, we want to talk to you. B2C, it's not for us, I'm afraid, but we've got good partners that we can refer you to. And our other specialism, in addition to B2B tech, especially fintech, is venture capital firms. We work with a bunch of VC investors and some from the LP side of the fence too, due to my experience and the team's experience in that field as well. So that, in a nutshell, is what we do. And we specialize on building reputations in markets. So typically working with firms that, as I mentioned, perhaps have raised that Series A and they've got a decent amount of runway ahead of them to build their narrative in the public domain. So that's typically when we plug in, and then we can work with firms as they grow.
Excellent. Well, that's very clear. Thank you very much for that. And I mean, the other thing that at a very meta level occurs to me is that you're a good example of somebody who worked in a variety of areas before they then founded something in it, as opposed to just founding. The previous episode was on founding in an area that you don't know, and we discussed all the dynamics around that. But as they say in the army, time spent in reconnaissance is seldom wasted, and all of these experiences, which may have been frustrating to you at the time, make you a much better founder at the age of 28 than you'd have been at 18, obviously. But equally, you don't have to wait till 38, 48, 58, because actually time increasingly is running out. So thank you very much for that, man. It's been very clear. I think it's been very well communicated, and I've shot myself in the foot, not just with karma destroying one of my microphones from my sort of scurrilous teasing you at the beginning, but I think you've just set a record for communications on the podcast of doing about 90% of the talking, which is very hard to do, although that has been facilitated by a coffee crisis here, namely we've run out of coffee actually, so I caught up on a bit of sleep in the background. But that's been incredibly helpful, and I think for all those people out there who are thinking about PR marketing in general and the firm's overall strategic approach and the communications around that, you've given them plenty of thought. And for those people who aren't thinking about these things today but might think about them tomorrow or even next month, then they can bear this in mind. So on behalf of myself and listeners, I wish to thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks for listening. If you are in need of a non-executive or advisory director with deep expertise, experience and contacts in the worlds of both traditional FS and fintech, or unique insight into how to make your board an engine of growth today, contact me at mike@mikeballyman.com. If you just need one-off advice in these areas, via clarity.fm/mikeballyman.
We could sit in a bender all day, watching the firelight dance, watching the firelight dance. We could walk in the mountains before dawn, watching a happy moon ride, watching a happy moon ride. To come away from the city, with the tarmac so dead and the people so sad. Come away from the city, with the faces so grey, with the pain of the everyday. The mountains and the trees. Can you see what I mean? Can you see what I mean? We fade in between the earth and the sky. Kiss the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. City goodbye. Watch the firelight dance with me. 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 Watch the firelight dance.